This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You were listening to a special edition of the iFanboy podcast, The Dark Knight. Welcome to a special edition podcast of the iFanboy comic book podcast. We're here talking about The Dark Knight, the highly anticipated movie that came out this weekend, starring Christian Bale and Morgan Freeman and a whole host of other actors, and Heath Ledger, the late Heath Ledger. I'm Ron. I'm here with
Connor.
And I'm Josh.
And so the movie came out this weekend. We all saw it. We were very excited to go see it. I'm going to warn everybody that we're going to be talking about what happens in the movie, so there will be spoilers aplenty. So if you haven't seen the movie yet, pause here and come back after you've seen the movie. But let's be realistic. You've probably seen the movie already, haven't
you? If you're one of the eight people who didn't get a ticket.
Yeah.
Like in the country.
Tickets were going. I saw tickets on eBay. I saw on Twitter somebody sold their IMAX tickets for $100 a piece.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was amazing. So
still going to be there next week.
I know. It's ridiculous. All right, cool. So going into the movie. Josh, what were your thoughts going into the movie? You know, kind of the build up and the hype and everything around it.
I was pretty much looking forward to it. I mean, Batman Begins for me is, you know, if not the best superhero movie, then certainly among them. You know, there's nothing better. And Chris Nolan is a director who I'm really coming to like, and I don't think he's really had any stinkers, so there was nothing to really worry about. If anything, I was almost subconsciously hesitant that I thought I couldn't really place the voice that Heath Ledger was doing. So like the bits of the Joker that were in the trailer, I had pretty good confidence because I thought he was a good choice from the start, but I just wasn't sure how he was playing it because I couldn't get a whole picture of it, and that was assuaged, as we will discuss later. Yeah. But, you know, I was really looking forward to it. It's one of those movies that there's all the billboards and the posters and everything are all over the place. And normally that just leads to giant disappointment. Yeah. But I didn't really think that was the case.
All right. Well, Connor, this is your big tentpole summer movie. This is the Batman guy. So what were your thoughts going into it?
Well, I don't think it was only me that it was a tentpole for. I think it was a tentpole for most people.
Well, yeah, of the three of us, you're the Batman fan.
My only worry was that it was being overhyped. It was being talked about to death by people who had seen it or other people saying it was going to be the greatest thing ever and Heath Ledger was going to get an Oscar nomination. I was worried about backlash. I was worried people would go in thinking, well, people said it was the best thing ever and it wasn't the best thing ever, so I'm going to talk about it badly. So that was my only worry, is that it was the possible backlash. I didn't really have any worry about the movie itself. As Josh said, it was Christopher Nolan's never done a bad movie, in my opinion, so there was not that worry. It was more of the too much hype in Heath Ledger's performance. That was my I was genuinely concerned about that.
Yeah.
In the beginning.
What I thought was really interesting was going into it. I mean, I saw all the summer comic book, you know, inspired movies here in San Francisco, and I was kind of shocked. I know it's not you guys have a different experience in New York, but even with Iron Man, but none of the movies have I had to like wait on a line or has the movie theater been filled. And I've gone on Friday nights. I've gone on, opening night, like 9 o'clock. It's not like I'm going to obscure showings. But for this one, I showed up an hour before the movie, and there was a line in the lobby for 3 showings. People were fighting for seats. It was a fervor that I hadn't seen in any movie yet. And I was curious, how much of that was built up by the hype, by the Heath Ledger stuff or whatever, but for whatever reason, and it might have been inspired by the success of Iron Man also. I think the fact that, like people were getting this, hey, comic book movies are good, and this is kind of the action movie, the movie events of the summer. Going into it, I was just surprised at how many people were dying to see it. Did you guys have the same experience? Or?
That's an interesting point. I think it's a combination of all the things. I think the last movie was really, really good. And one of the things that happens with really, really good movies, especially these kind, is that they come out on DVD and people watch them and they show them and people get more excited. So by the time the sequel comes out, you combine the fact that the first movie was really good plus a summer of a bunch of these movies that are just sort of building and building, like each one better than the next, and all the marketing and everything, it just becomes like a fever pitch, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Totally.
I haven't been in a theater that crazy in a while. It was literally people everywhere. The line I was in to go see the film stretched from – and the theater I went to is multi-story theater. You go up like 3 stories to get to the screens. And the line started at the front of the door of the theater, stretched down all the stairs through the lobby of the theater, out the door and down the block. That was the line per screen, and it was insane. It was literally people everywhere.
Wow. That's crazy. So, all right. So, enough about the kind of leading into it. So, we saw the movie. What did you think?
Very, very good.
Connor, did it live up to your expectation?
It blew away all the expectations. I mean, this was a movie that I had high hopes for, and it not only delivered on every hope, but it surpassed it. I didn't expect the movie this good.
Yeah.
And I didn't expect them to hit this so the high level they hit. It was incredible.
Yeah, I have to admit it was freaking awesome. And I thought it was really, really good. But I know a lot of times we talk about, the question that everybody's asking, well, is it better than Iron Man? And is it, every movie comes out, kind of comparing. And I thought it was possibly one of the best movies I've seen in a while, but good for a different reason than why Iron Man was good. I thought this one was way more of a suspenseful kind of thriller, where Iron Man was more of an action movie.
They're completely different types of films. So, yeah. Comparing them is almost unfair. They both come from comic books, but that's about where it ends. And,
right.
We would take nothing away from Iron Man. Absolutely fun, perfect film. It was great for what it was. This movie was on a different level.
Yeah.
It was a motion picture, that people are going to remember. It's a film that it's going to make a mark, and people are going to talk about it for a long time. And I don't know if I'd stick it up there like Godfather levels or anything like that, but it's close for our time. Like when you look back at the past few years, like Lord of the Rings movies, this movie, it's the best thing I've seen in a while.
Yeah. So it definitely built on whatever the foundation they built on Batman Begins, I think it almost kind of surpassed it. So what was good about it? What made it so good?
Well, one of the things I said in the mini and what Josh just mentioned is that it was more of a crime thriller than a superhero action adventure. It was more like along the lines of Heat. I really keep saying Heat because it really was similar in that you have these opposite characters that came together at the end, and it was. It was very much in that sort of sense in the crime thriller vein, or as opposed to the action adventure vein, and it was incredible because for years people always I'd read a lot about people saying, why don't they do a Batman story that's more like a thriller, because he's different than other superheroes in that he can do a story about a serial killer or something like that. They should try something like that, and that's almost what they did here. I mean, it's still basically a superhero movie, but it's done in a completely different style than we've seen from other superhero movies before.
It's interesting. I mean, because really the only thing that makes it a superhero movie is the fact that he's wearing a mask and has a cape. I mean, like,
right.
I mean, other than
it's
that,
really a cop. It's really a cop movie.
Yeah, it's totally a cop movie, and it's like, and you see, I mean, like, ultimately the main thrust of the story is that Batman and Gordon trying to clean up the Gotham City from the mob. I mean, that's basically
and Harvey Dent. I mean, that was
yeah.
The, yeah.
Yeah. So I mean,
and what it does to all of them.
Yeah, exactly. So so Heath Ledger as the Joker. If you ask me, all the comments and you know, credit and the Oscar nomination rumors and stuff like that are totally worth it. He owned this role. Like, it was ridiculous.
I've got to say that and I walked out of the theater just thinking, you know, I could absolutely see him getting an Oscar for this.
Yeah.
And I'm not a person to be overly zealous about things. Like, when I'm like, wow, that was really amazing for a few different reasons. One thing is, you take 70 years of the Joker existing, so that's a lot of character to choose from. So he took bits of that, and things, you know, showed up that were very familiar to the people who've been reading comics. There's stuff in that performance that we recognize, but also he brought his own thing to it and really came up with what I'd say is a new and completely valid interpretation of the character. You know, not unlike the way that Grant Morrison, when he writes the Joker, like, he says he changes every once in a while, like he becomes a different type of thing within his own psychosis. You know, this was a really neat version of him. And he created something that was literally, you know, we've always talked about how the Joker should be really, really frightening. Like, the idea is that he's a clown, but that's counterpoint to the fact that he should be a terrifying figure. And he absolutely was. When he's on screen, he's arresting. You can't watch him. He's the Joker is extremely intelligent and smart, but he's absolutely crazy and the most scary thing that could ever be.
Yeah, I mean,
and he was all those things.
I mean, the big thing about it for me, at least when you talk about a really good acting job by somebody, is that whether you can forget who they are, you know, like, it's kind of hard to, like, you look at you know, Christian Bale as Batman, and he looks like Christian Bale, and he's talking, you know, like, okay, I know that's Christian Bale. I completely, like, Heath Ledger was the Joker. I forgot. I couldn't even see the Heath Ledger I knew. You know, from the combination of the makeup and the scars and things like that. But even in his voice and the performance and the mannerisms, I thought, like, the way the little nervous tics and the way that he kind of presented himself and
the lip licking.
Yeah. Ugh. Oh, yeah. And just like little kind of the you know, and like, and the way and it really came out in the scenes when, you know, like when Batman is in the interrogation room with the Joker and they're having that long conversation. And then later on when Joker's being hung upside down and they're having that, you know, the "you complete me" kind of conversation, stuff like that. Just the window into the mind and the character, it just he became that character. It was freaky. It was so good.
Yeah, he was unrecognizable. If you didn't know anything somehow about this movie or Heath Ledger, I think it'd be difficult to say who played Heath the Joker. You know,
which is incredibly brave on his part. If you think about it, this is a guy who's, you know, he was a really good-looking dude. He could have been going after the leading man parts and doing, you know, the romantic leads and stuff like that. And he chose to do this. That's a hugely brave thing for an actor to do, I think.
Yeah. It was just kind of amazing, and it really was the backbone of this movie. This movie was, I mean, like, I found myself, like, in the first movie, I found myself wanting to see the scenes with Batman. And in this movie, I found myself wanting to get to the scenes with the Joker.
Well, I think the backbone of the movie is Harvey Dent, but I think the Joker is the emotion, and, you know, it's the thing you want to get to. But the movie is built around Harvey Dent. But staying with the Joker, every scene with Batman was gold. Every scene with Batman was me sitting there thinking, finally they've done it. They've finally gotten the Batman Joker relationship. I mean, all due respect to Jack Nicholson, and I like the '89 Batman movie a lot. It's you know, it's on my DVD shelf. I watch it, but that wasn't, you know, that was still Jack Nicholson playing Jack Nicholson with Joker makeup on. This was a character that was finally being conceived on film the way we've known him to be in the comics for so many years. He's a terrifying force of nature, and they finally did it. Even – it's funny. I just a couple days ago watched an episode of the animated series Batman with the Joker in it. And even then, it kind of – he's kind of ruined all Jokers now, because I watched that and I was like – he's not scary, this Joker, this animated Joker. Like, this kind of animated Joker is kind of buffoonish.
Yeah.
Now that I've seen this Joker, it was funny because I didn't have that feeling before, but now watching it, I'm kind of like, all other Jokers are sort of out the window at this point.
Yeah, and it was really interesting because, I mean, the two things I thought were interesting was that one is that the comic book influences in the movie, I think, were apparent. I mean, you definitely had echoes of the Killing Joke in several conversations and several lines in the movie, you know, like between the Batman and Joker kind of relationship. Of course, you know, Gordon and his whole unit was Gotham Central. I mean, you know, like the way the office looked, and there was the Renee Montoya and the Bullock-esque kind of cops and things like that. I thought that was really interesting. But But what I think was interesting with the specifically with the Joker was that I got really, Ledger made his own Joker, but I totally got echoes of previous Jokers, and that there was moments where, you know, I got an echo of Cesar Romero, I got an echo of Nicholson, you know, like the scene when with the tractor trailer when he's, you know, when Heath Ledger's walking towards Batman who's on the cycle, like that reminded me of the 89 Batman. Not that it was not in the way that the echoes of previous movies like in Indiana Jones to me I had a problem with, rather just kind of like, oh wow, okay, like I get that reference, but he's doing it in his own way, you know. And I thought that was really like a nice layering kind of approach to the character. So
I think that the big example for it really was, for me, the best example of him doing the Joker is when he was in the dress, the nurse uniform.
Yeah,
perfect.
And on the one hand, like, it's really funny, like I'm laughing, but it's scary. Yep. And like, so none of his gravitas is lost. None of his you know, his importance as a force is lost, but he's also in a nurse dress.
Yeah.
And that right there, like, there you go. That's what the Joker's all about. I don't think that it's ever been done that way before.
And a wig.
Yeah.
I mean, just like, it's ridiculous and terrifying at the same time.
When he sits down in that scene and smiles at Harvey, kind of like, whoops, this kind of smile, that was like the perfect characterization of the Joker. In a nonverbal, in a not just a totally visual way, he nailed it in every sense of the word.
Yeah, and it was just so interesting to see. And for me, not only just the manners like that, but also like the plans, like the bank robbery in the beginning, and the way he approached the other, you know, kind of crime families, and then like even with the grand plan, you know, of the dance with Batman and Gordon about, you know, like you know as much as, you know, the tide turned throughout the movie, he was always in control. It was all going to his plan, or either it was all going according to his plan, or he was able to make changes to his plan to react to what they were doing. And it was a dance. I mean, it was a dance between good and evil. And it was just, I thought that was really great. But yeah, so obviously Heath Ledger is the kind of breakout star of that. But Connor, you said that the backbone of the movie is Harvey Dent. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's all the whole movie was about his journey. I mean, his being the White Knight to Batman's Dark Knight, and then what that did to him and how that destroyed him and his life and how he became Two-Face. That was his arc, was the arc of the film. It was the most important element of the film. As great as the Joker was, it was about Harvey Dent, really.
It's interesting to see how the Joker, you know, the Joker is the Chaos Agent, and Dent and Batman is the Order, and then, you know, the Joker being the one to drive Dent to do what he did and to become Two-Face and to, you know, that the kind of fall from grace.
A little bit of commentary on society and what society does to heroes.
It's actually in his arc is parallel with the arc of sort of Gotham City.
Yeah,
I mean, which was not in good shape, but it had some hope, and then that was just messed up. You know, it's funny because all of this talk about Heath Ledger is great, but it's unfortunate because Aaron Eckhart really turned in what I thought was a really good performance as well, and it's getting completely overshadowed.
That Two-Face, you know, makeup was chilling.
Whereas the Joker was a beautiful representation of that, so was Two-Face. I mean, I didn't expect the Two-Face makeup to look that good.
I hadn't
read a lot about what was going to happen in the movie, and part of me thought that maybe he wasn't even going to be Two-Face in this movie. Like, it was going to be like in the first Batman movie where Orlando was Harvey Dent, but you know, he never showed up. You know, he just was there. So I didn't know if that was just something that was going to happen at the end, or they were going to hint at it. I didn't know that was going to. It was nice to not know. But no, I mean, Harvey Dent was the only thing about Harvey Dent was that they overstated the whole "no, he is the hero" or like just a few too many times for me. Like, I got it.
Yeah, it was a little heavy handed, and kind of they threw it kind of towards the end. Like, even, you know, by the end of it, I'm like, all right, enough with this, the hero stuff. But it, you know, I understand why they were doing that. So.
Sure.
Yeah.
But he was great, and I can see, you know, like from that, I'm picturing Aaron Eckhart doing these other kind of roles, you know, like I've heard his name bandied around for like Captain America or something, and I was sure I could totally see that now.
Yeah,
he could. That would be neat.
Although I think he might be a little too old for Captain America in World War II.
Maybe,
but maybe. But the still standout continuing from Batman Begins into this movie is that I just absolutely love Gary Oldman as Gordon. I mean, it's just he delivers such a subtle, understated performance, and just like
which is unusual for Gary Oldman.
Yeah,
I mean, when you want
totally
over the
unusual,
top.
Totally unusual.
Yeah. I mean, he is Gordon. I mean, you could see he becomes Jim Gordon, and the frustration and the dealing with the system and trying to fight, you know, be the good cop in a corrupt city. It's just like, you know, the pain on his face, and just like Gary Oldman, if you ask me, is like even more, you know, underrated than Eckhart, and you know, like, you know, he deserves a ton of attention in my mind, but that's just me.
You know, he's really good, but I wonder if people who didn't read, you know, Batman Year One appreciate how cool that is.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like because it was so subtle, it almost doesn't stand out. But if you've got an affinity for that character and you've been reading, you know, and you've read Frank Miller's Batman Year One, then that's something really neat.
Yeah,
I guess, and he looks just like it, and he acts just like it, and for Gary Oldman, I mean, the dude who's just way out there if he needs to be. I don't even think I've ever seen him be this subtle, so it's so cool.
Yeah, I love Gary Oldman. Oh God. So
I like that they played the same music cue when Gordon is with his son, right before he gets the call that Dent's been kidnapped. He's with the son, and the son's sleeping. They played the same music cue as when Bruce was remembering his father. It was a nice little. I love the score in these films. I really like the score a lot.
Yeah.
So what about Batman? Are we gonna mention Batman?
Because I love Christian Bale as Batman.
Yeah, I like Christian Bale a lot.
He's really almost an afterthought in this movie though, because there's so many things going on, and he was. I mean, largely the same as he'd been before, which was very good. But it's interesting that he wasn't really the centerpiece. He was just there.
Well, yeah.
And there's a lot more of him as Bruce, a lot more of him getting to be funny and charming Bruce Wayne than he was in this. I mean, every time he showed up with girls on his arm, the audience, you know, applauded and laughed. I loved the scene where he goes to Hong Kong to grab the mob accountant. I thought that was a fantastic scene. Yep. But I love the idea that they sent him to Hong Kong. It's something Batman can do. But I liked that Bruce was doing it as Bruce until the very end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I liked the fact that he went out during the day as Bruce, basically Batman.
Yeah, I thought that was great. I mean, and somebody wrote in or called in a few episodes ago complaining about the trailer, saying it looked like Batman was like outside in daylight when it turned out to be dusk. But you know, anytime anything happened during the day, he even said it. When Alfred was just like, "Are you going to take the Batmobile?" And he's like, "No." He's like, "In the middle of broad daylight, that's a little, you know, that's not too subtle." And he jumped in the Lamborghini and did what he had to do as Bruce Wayne. I mean,
or the motorcycle, and he had the same outfit on as he had in Year One when he went the motorcycle and that. And it's just like it was a great. Nolan has a great understanding of Bruce Wayne's character, even if he's not the showiest figure in these films. He's still portrayed perfectly, I think.
Yeah,
no, it's really neat. And you know, the one complaint I've heard from a lot of people is the Batman voice.
The gravelly voice, yeah.
But if
you've got to cover your voice,
that
works for me. I can't complain about that. It was the same thing.
It got to me a little because I felt as if it was even more than the last movie. But at the same time, I understand why and understand what it was. And just it kind of – I found myself more laughing at it than buying it, you know, but –
He had more dialogue.
Yeah,
he had a lot more dialogue as Batman, but it makes sense. I mean, if Josh walked in with a mask on and said, "Hey, dudes, I'm Batman," we'd be like,
"No,
you sound
just
like Josh." You sound just like Josh.
So,
are you a little short to be Batman?
But what was it? What was
I wasn't going to say that.
Yes, you were.
I was thinking it. I was thinking it, but not saying it.
What was interesting with the Batman stuff, though, like in the very beginning, was like, and this brings up, you know, the idea of, you know, like how realistic these movies are, and like I thought it was great the opening sequence, you know, where he's, you know, where he's fighting, you know, people who are dressing up like him,
right.
And kind of copycats, and then like, and then the stuff with the armor, how like the movie, when the movie starts, his armor, he can't really turn his head, and so he goes to Lucius, he's like, "I need to change the armor so I can turn my head," and just like it's a realistic, you know, like if somebody really was Batman, what they would be doing. Yeah.
I loved that because I was watching that first scene and I thought to myself, he looks a little goofy, like he can't move. Yeah. And I thought, well, that's going to take me out of it. And then the very next scene, he's like, "I can't move." And I was like, yes.
Yeah.
Which meant they did that on purpose.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like everything – and it was the same thing when the Joker started to tell his origin to somebody. And I just thought, no, don't do that. Yeah. Don't define him.
He's like explaining how he got his scars.
I was so like, you're not going to do that. And then later he told a different origin to somebody. And I just thought, you are vindicated. I am sorry. That was excellent.
There is very little in this film to be upset about, it, from my opinion. Yeah. I mean, there was a couple of things like there was one major plot hole that kind of got swept away in the momentum of the film. But other than that, I thought there really wasn't a lot for me to complain about.
The Joker party scene?
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. The Joker is in the scene with all of the highfalutin guests of Gotham City, including Harvey Dent, who he'd come to get. They throw Rachel out the window. Batman dives out the window. Who knows what happened up in that room? I guess it's not important.
Yeah, just fade into next day.
Ah! The Joker went, well, nothing to do here. Walk up.
Yeah, that was.
Well, Harvey was in the panic room. He was hidden.
Yeah.
Like, the Batman room. Yeah, there's your hero for you. I'll hide here.
No, Batman threw him in the room.
Yeah, Batman threw him in the room and put the metal bar between it, which is kind of obvious that he's in there, but whatever. That's okay. But yeah, no, that plot hole was pretty big. And yeah, no.
But if we go back to the beginning for a second, I love the fact that they started with a brief scene with Scarecrow.
Yeah.
I love it added so much texture to the universe that this guy was still running around, that those were these people still around in Gotham City, and it was more it led more depth to the world. It wasn't just one villain at a time. There was other guys. I remember when it was announced that Cillian Murphy was going to reprise Scarecrow, people were like, "Oh no, too many villains." Right. And it was perfect the way they used him.
Yeah, I thought that was great, and the fact that he got, you know, the dogs attacked him and he got hurt, and like, and back in the pseudo Batcave or whatever, you see like the toll that, like, you know, apparently like Wayne Manor is still not rebuilt. Like, this is still like the same year as Batman Begins. Yeah. Like, I didn't feel like a lot of time had passed since the last movie. So
I think overall, like, and that has to do with the character of the city as well. Like, Gotham City in this was really, really well represented as something.
Yeah,
you know, as what it is, like, Gotham is very important to the Batman mythos, and so the city of it has a character of its own, and it felt like an awful place to be.
Yeah,
which is what it's supposed to feel like, and it's just a hopeless den of
although
corruption.
On the city side, though, I thought it was much more obvious that it was Chicago this time around than the last movie.
At one point, I did see a sign that was like Chicago, better homes.
Yeah, and like the license plates were Illinois license plates and stuff like that, which is fine, you know, like, but it was. You know, like last movie, they had the train and things like that that kind of distinguished it, and they had a different building that we created. This, they were just like, yeah, it's Chicago. He's standing on the Sears Tower. You know, it works.
I mean, it's not different than New York. I mean, that's just every time you see.
I'm glad it wasn't New York, quite honestly. At least they use Chicago instead of New York or Toronto. Well, standing
it looked totally different. It looked totally different than the New York Chicago. I mean, New York Toronto thing. It just worked for it.
Yeah.
Even if people who know Chicago are like, well, it's Chicago. Everyone else can consider it a different city because you've seen New York a billion times.
Yeah.
Mm.
Metropolis is, you know, all the Superman movies is basically New York. So
right. One thing that really struck me about the movie itself was Nolan's direction, not only in the suspense and the thriller. And Connor, you said, you know, he used the score was great, and I thought the use of, you know, audio and sound effects and music to really heighten, you know, like when you know the Joker was going to take out either the commissioner, or the judge, or Dent, and you didn't know who it was going to be, and it turned out to be everybody, and you know, like, I thought that was just amazing. But I was shocked and I'm still impressed at the high quality of the action sequences. You know,
I love the fact that Nolan loves practical effects.
Yeah. Yeah,
I like good CGI effects as much as the next guy, but I hate that that's basically all that's used now. And Nolan is an old school guy. He wherever he could use a real effect and a real practical effect in this film, he did. He tried to minimize the CGI, and it was just so good to see actual trucks flipping over, people actually doing real things.
That was the standout for me. The whole chase scene and the 18-wheeler, and then when Batman breaks out into the Batcycle, and that whole scene along that stretch of road when Batman throws the wires out and flips the Joker's 18-wheeler truck, and you see an 18-wheeler go end over end, flip over. I mean, I've never seen anything like that before, and the entire crowd gasped and went, "Whoa!" You know, like it was amazing. I thought it was really good. And then the hospital explosion when he blew up the general hospital was, yeah. I mean, that was. I mean, the guy sitting next to me gasped at the, you know, like, "Oh my god!" You know, like he blew up the whole building. It was amazing.
Yeah, it was an epic explosion.
Yeah.
And I'm not one to be like, whoa, cool explosion, but that was a cool explosion.
Yeah.
You know, I think people are so desensitized to computer effects that when you see real stuff, it's kind of like it's more impactful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good, you know, way to figure that out, Nolan. You know, what's funny is that if anybody has asked me about this film since I've seen it, if I don't talk about Ledger, the first thing that I always end up saying is, like, this is the most intense film I've seen in years. Like literally gripping the seat, like not breathing enough. Way too tense, like got out and thought, I want to see that again, but not for a while. I need some time.
Yeah.
I need to rest. I picked up smoking. It's a very intense tense film.
Yeah.
and that's amazing because I don't think anyone's been able to do that with a comic book film thus far, or even really, you know, even an action film doesn't, you know.
Yeah, no.
Films don't get this tense.
Yeah, no. I mean, the edge of the seat aspect of it was really strong. And conversely, like the cheering points. I mean, like there were like you know, when I was really upset when Commissioner Gordon, or not where whatever Gordon before he becomes commissioner, seemed to be dead. Like I was like, oh my god, I can't believe they killed Gordon. And then that whole scene where they're transferring Dent, and there's the quiet cop driving the paddy wagon, and I'm like, in my head, I'm like, oh, that's totally Gordon. But like when they revealed him and he arrested the Joker, I literally clapped and screamed, and I never do that, you know, like it was just it got you on every emotional level, I thought, which is not easy to do.
I love that gave Gordon a moment like that.
Oh, it was great.
And when the son asked if Batman saved, he said, "No, I actually saved Batman," and he made like a little embarrassed smile, like he was perfect.
Yeah. Oh god.
What was awesome was that they killed Rachel.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was really it was awesome, but that was ballsy too. That was, you know, that gives loss, and you know, and it's funny because, you know, like I mentioned earlier that, you know, this is a different movie than Iron Man, and Iron Man I felt as if had a bit more humor aspect to this, but even there were little moments of kind of, you know kind of chuckles and things like that. And like when, you know, I know it's supposed to be a sad scene, but when Batman's sitting there and when Bruce Wayne is sitting there and after Rachel's died and Alfred brings over and he's got the note from Rachel and he's saying, you know, Bruce Wayne saying, oh, she was going to come to me, and Alfred just kind of slightly just grabs the note and walks away. You know, like it was. I don't think that wasn't funny at all. Oh, it made me laugh. I don't know. Maybe because it was just.
You're sick.
Yeah.
That was not funny at all. No, Rachel dying shocked me. I mean, that was fantastic. And not because she's a bad character, but because it really set the stage for what the Joker was going to do. And there was going to be real loss in this film. And this movie was all about loss. I mean,
yep.
Harvey Dent was lost. Rachel was lost, literally. I mean,
it's Empire.
The city lost. Batman loses his stature at the end. I mean, everybody loses, except for basically Gordon, who gets promoted to commissioner. But
yeah. That's the one thing at the end. I mean, like, so the movie ends with you know, the Gordon and Batman, you know, discussing and Batman saying that, you know, everybody can't know what's happened to Dent. And, you know, he needs to still be a thing. He's like, I did it. You know, you say I did it and you chase me and all that kind of stuff. How did you feel about that ending? I mean, like with, you know, Gordon taking down the bat signal and then now he's being kind of like on the run type aspect.
That's a good question.
Yeah. I mean, that ending did challenge me a little. I didn't quite.
I thought it worked. I mean, it worked in the context of the world they set up, and that they needed someone to take the fall, and they needed to not be Harvey Dent because people would lose hope because they'd all put all their hope into Harvey Dent. So
right.
Batman can take that. He can be the hero that Gotham needs, depending on what Gotham needs at the time. And they're right. What they needed was a scapegoat, and he could still be the hero outcast because he was a symbol.
Yeah.
And he could still be that. I mean, Gordon would know it, and Batman would know it, but no one else needed to know that he was the.
Right. It was good because it was the appropriate choice for the characters in this situation. Like, it was the hard choice that people had to make, and it's just the same thing. Like, no, you don't want that, but you know that it's the right thing to do.
Right.
I guess.
Yeah.
Sets them up for another film anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know if they should or can make another film.
No. Got their losses.
You don't think they should?
Well,
Connor and I were talking about this, and we had a really hard time thinking about who a potential villain would be, because there's no supervillains. There's no superpower to anybody.
Right.
Everything is based in reality. And then after that, like, who do you have left? You've got the Penguin, who's a little ridiculous and has kind of been done.
He can only be done as a mobster, which is what we've done already.
Right. You can do
Catwoman. Catwoman's not a villain.
Right, no, I know, but she's a foil. She's a, you know,
but she can't be the main. Whoever's fighting Batman has to be the pure force of evil on the other side.
Right.
And you need to have – it has to be a crescendo to the third film, and you can't have it be kind of someone who's not really bad.
Right.
Then it's not really, – there's no stakes in that.
Mr. Freeze.
Yeah.
That's
again,
actually possible.
Yeah, it's so possible.
Yeah.
But he's science-based.
Yeah.
The possibility is that Harvey Dent's not really dead, and they faked his funeral, and they locked him up in Arkham Asylum, hopefully never to be seen again, and he gets out. That's a possibility.
Yeah.
Ra's al Ghul not really being dead because he never saw his body is a possibility. I mean, I just think.
I mean, well, no,
it's
I mean,
gonna be really tough.
You got Riddler. You got
again. None of these people are. They're all gonna look lame in comparison to the Joker. And
yeah, that's it.
You went with your full force of evil for the second film. You can't go out on the Riddler and Catwoman in the third film just because it doesn't look like. The stakes have to get raised higher and higher. From Ra's to Joker.
It would be like Jurassic Park 3, which didn't really have a reason to be.
Yeah.
Right. Sure, it was entertaining, but I can't believe I just compared it to that movie. I'd like to strike that comment from the record. Jeff Goldblum had nothing to do with it. That's all I'm saying.
I love
the dinosaur.
I had a great audience, and I'd like to commend anybody who was at the Sony Lincoln Square in Manhattan at 6:45 on Friday. it was packed. I got stuck in the third row center, so I was like way close to the screen. But everybody quieted down for the film. There was no commenting. There were people cheered for everything. They laughed. They applauded Heath Ledger's almost every time he came on screen. After every time he left the screen, actually, after his performance was done, they applauded when Commissioner Gordon got promoted to commissioner. They applauded everything and laughed and cheered when Batman did something cool. And it was very. That's why you go to those. I mean, that was the kind of experience was why you go to the movies.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like it as much as more because usually there's cell phones and crying babies and teenagers talking. But when you go to a movie like this and then you have a great audience, it's really why you go to the movies.
Yeah. And apparently I didn't get to see the IMAX version yet, but friends of mine who saw the IMAX version said that if you get the chance, definitely go see it because, you know, he shot it for IMAX this time as opposed to just putting the movie on IMAX. And apparently it's supposed to be a spectacle. So
apparently
I plan on seeing it as soon as
year.
As soon as San Diego's done, I plan on getting to come back and go into the IMAX because I mean you can't replicate that in your house, so I have to see that. I have to see that somehow.
I totally want to see it again. So yeah. So awesome. So so Dark Knight totally delivered. So head over to ifanboy.com and there'll be a post with the show as well as people who are sharing their thoughts about the movie. So head over there and tell everybody what you thought of the movie. We want to hear what you think, whether what you liked, what you didn't like. And be sure to check out ifanboy.com where we've got our regular audio podcast as well as our video show as well as great discussion and columns and those things and the comics reviews and all that kind of stuff. That's all at ifanboy.com.
If you didn't go watch iFanboy Mini number 89, the one from this past Friday where we did the little short video capsule review.
Bravo. Bravo. You guys really delivered on that mini. So definitely go check out iFanboy Mini, their review, because it was a very well done job, guys. So
In addition to the people at the Sony Lincoln Square, I'd like to commend the three of us for doing probably the least controversial special edition podcast ever.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, every time, you don't know, this movie was awesome. Awesome, or vice versa. So there.
And it's true. So this is the last superhero movie of the comic book movie of the summer. It looks like the next one is going to be in September for Greg Rucka and Steve Lieber's Whiteout, which is
Whiteout, then Punisher, and then Spirit. That'll be a fun one. I'm really excited for the Spirit, only to see what the hell is going to happen with it.
Yeah, exactly. Because I don't know what the hell. I'm glad to see. Posters.
It could be a train wreck.
Posters.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, posters are starting to crop up here in San Francisco, and they're not the kind. I mean, they're a lot of the character posters, and
They've been up here for a while. All the like get on your knees poster with Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah, exactly. So be sure to tune in to stay tuned when we'll be covering those movies as well as everything else going on in comics. So until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor, and they should have Maxi Zeus be the next villain.
And I'm Josh, and I don't know what that means.
Look up Maxi Zeus, Jim Aparo.
Wikipedia. Ooh. Yeah.
I want anarchy. In his pilgrim hat.
Hitman.
They just did that.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.